Oh my goodness.
Blog Talk Radio.
Coming to you live from the Mad Dog Dynasty League headquarters in Miguanago, Wisconsin, Fat Guy with a Phone Productions proudly presents another episode of the Mad Dog Dynasty League podcast. It's time to enter the doghouse. I'm your host, the commissioner of the Mad Dog Dynasty League, and the aforementioned Fat Guy with a Phone himself, Rick Goreski. We're getting the band back together for one last dance to the tune of the 2016 Mad Dog offseason. Specifically, we're about to recap the Red Division. Due to time constraints, there's a lot of good discussion that got left on the cutting room floor, so we decided to stop every four teams and do a summary to hit on some of the things we didn't get to during the first run. Before we can start that, it's time to add the we to me. Time to introduce my co-host for today's show. First, he blew out his knee on the field of the Milwaukee Mustangs. For as much as I make things up during some of these intros, this one's true. Please welcome the owner of the Malicious Minds, Tom Buckles. Want to tell everybody about it, Tom?
Yeah, I got a trip with my feet, and I took a knee into the dang turf, and the rest is history. I had a cantaloupe on my knee.
You got to set the table. So there we are before a Milwaukee Mustangs. Was it a practice or was it a game? I think we were there early. It was after a game, wasn't it?
No, this was the first initial time when we went there, you were going to take your job on as becoming the equipment guy, and the coach actually asked us about getting ready, and we were like kicking ourselves nowadays thinking, what the hell were we thinking? Yes,
people think we're completely shitting them right now, but Lou Saban asked us to try out for the Milwaukee Mustangs, but I was afraid that I would lose my equipment job, so I turned it down.
And me, I was just along for the ride, and I should have said, I'm in.
In hindsight, that would have been awesome to do, but we were playing on the turf. I think it was the former Orange Bowl turf is what we had down there, the Orange Bowl or the Fiesta Bowl turf, and we were just screwing around after a game, running some routes, and I threw a ball, and Tom, in the end zone, just caught his foot on the turf and screwed up his knee. I don't remember if you caught it, though, do you?
I couldn't even tell you. All I know is I had the nice cantaloupe on my knee.
Well, I'll tell you what. This many years later, you caught it. It was a diving grab with your knee, clutching your knee with one arm and the ball with the other. Next up, he loves mint chocolate chip ice cream and enjoys fleecing me in Dynasty League trades. Both truths, by the way. Today is a Truth or Dare show, and that's the truth. He's the tone setter, the owner of the Stoneform Pallies, Steve Wellman. Thanks for coming on, Steve.
Thank you.
Ever tear your knee up on a gallon of mint chocolate chip?
No, but I did blow it out playing football as well.
Did you really? Tell us about it.
I was playing safety in a rec league, and I was going down to tackle a guy, and the cornerback grabbed the receiver by the waist and swung him around and whipped me right in the leg, and it just bent it perfectly straight backwards. No ligament tears, but all the cartilage in that knee is gone.
Where was this? Like in a park on a grass field or?
Riverside High School.
So it was during high school you were playing, or was it after high school?
No, it was like a semi-pro rec league. There's a bunch of like semi-pro teams around. This is when I was what, I don't know, 23, 24 years old.
God, it's
back when
awesome.
I was athletically gifted.
You're hot.
Now now everybody loves you for your mind, not your body.
right. Well, you know, the funny thing is, too, being the young, stupid kid that I am, Riverside High School right across the street from is a Walgreens. So I went into Walgreens, bought a bottle of Tylenol and an Ace bandage, popped like 6 Tylenol, bandaged it up, and kept on playing. Doctor told me that was one of the dumbest things I could have ever did.
I want to give you a hug. Can I do it?
That is, like, awesome, though.
Do it.
Look at the story you just had. Gentlemen, we're here tonight in what is the last show of this 15-part series to dig deeper into the Red Division's offseason moves. Every one of these episodes goes so fast. A lot of topics we want to pursue more deeply end up on the cutting room floor. I kept notes along the way and came up with a list of things that demands more attention. So let's do this. Let's do it. That's your cue, man.
Do it.
Yeah. Way to go.
Do it.
In the White Division recap show, we talked about a shift in talent from the blue to the white. I think we saw another shift with the teams in the red. And I think we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about how impressive the teams in the red were with respect to the overall depth of the rosters and the quality of the starting lineups. I mean, when you're looking at the Red Division, who's the dud? And I'm not trying to be facetious or arrogant. I'm pretending I'm not even in the division. I'm just saying these guys are really good teams. For every team, you could see a legitimate path, at least I could, see a legitimate path to the division title in the playoffs, a playoff spot. So the stats were nuts. I tip my hat to my brothers in the red. What do you guys think? Steve, you're leading off this show.
Well, you know, the thing with the Red Division is that all the teams in there are pretty strong. So it's really actually tough to improve. They're almost a division of guys trying to maintain and get that one last step, that one last notch towards winning the championship. I mean, it boggles my mind that only one out of the five championships is won out of that division. But I do believe there's still a definite pecking order there. Dream Team and Crazy Seven, they're definitely, I believe, they're the alpha dogs. And Show Me Your TDs and Marauding Minotaurs still have a bit of catching up to do. And I don't want to harp on it too much, but I just really think that the Marauding Minotaurs just set themselves back this year. Now, they set themselves up good for next year, but I think they didn't do what they needed to do to step up and make a real charge for the top of the division this year. Show Me Your TDs kind of made a little progress forward. I just don't think with Dream Team and Crazy Seven's roster, it's so tough to match up with those guys year in and year out.
Tom, do you have some comments?
Yeah, I'm gonna take a hard stand on this one. I'm gonna flip the script. I have some weird feeling that this year we're gonna see a change in power. I guess I would say. I'm going to say that this is the year that the red is going to be dead, and the other two are going to take that next step up. I think this is going to be that year that you're going to see some teams come out of nowhere and surprise people, and teams that used to get smacked around by them. I see some of the teams have made improvements, and they're going to catch them. And with the injuries and people that are out and suspensions and things of that nature that are out there, I just see that this is a division that's ripe for the picking now. So I'm trading to get into this division. So, yeah.
Well, I actually, my own personal comments are that I think, I really mean it when I say every team you can see a legitimate path. You could see a way that they could win the division title in the playoffs. It's not like a reach. And I think if you put these teams in other divisions, they would battle for the division title in those divisions. So I don't know if you can say that about all the teams in our league, but I think the teams in the red, that's my tip of the hat to the teams in the red and how good they are. So let's move over to the next topic. Let's talk titties. You show me your TDs. Scott Phillips' team was sick. I couldn't believe the stats there. How the hell does that team not win more games? I mean, honestly, TDs finished 7-7, But it wasn't the red division that stood in their way. They were 4-2 in the red division. They were 3-5 against the rest of the league. So truth be told, Scott was 5-7 heading into the final two division games of the year. And then they won those two games, the last two, to finish 7-7. So, again, going back to some of the stats that we had from Scott's, you know, 2015 rankings, they were all in like the top three or four in the league in almost all categories except defensive line. They died. They had bad losses last year. They lost to Klingons Around Uranus. They lost to Stoneform Pallies. They lost to the Malicious Minds, who won the Blue Division. Also lost to You're in Trouble, Downhill from Here, Dream Team, and Crazy. You know, they went 1-3 against the White Division. Oddly enough, they defeated Lost in the Sauce, who won the title, and they went 2-2 against the Blue. So what do you guys have to say about Scott Phillips' team after hearing, you know, it wasn't the Red Division that did him in? It was the rest of the league.
Well, my take on that is why I picked them to pick in the lower half of that division is because those losses came due to a lot of things. Well, in a nutshell, their lack of depth. They don't have enough guys that if somebody gets cold or somebody gets hurt, that they can put in guys that can pick up the slack. And I think they got into a little bit of trouble in the middle part of the year, and they don't have the horses in the stable to keep pulling the wagon. You know, sorry for all the cliches, but that's what I think separates Crazy and Dream Team from Marauding Minotaurs and Show Me Your TDs is that those top two teams have just enough guys in all positions that if need be, they can win close games because they can put in guys due to matchups, due to injury, due to poor performance, and I just don't think those other two guys are deep enough to do it. And I think TDs is a classic example of that.
Tom, what do you think?
I would just believe that TDs ran into a old-fashioned problem that a lot of teams do, and it was the injury bug. Most of his team was injured. I mean, Matt Forte missed tons of the year. Tevin Campbell missed the year. Amir Abdul missed most of the year.
Did you say Nevin?
No.
Campbell?
No. But, I mean, Alshon Jeffrey was hurt. A.J. Green was like, you know, his numbers were, I mean, they're still staggering numbers. They were good numbers, but not on the pace of what he normally would do. You'd see him at least in the 300s normally. Michael Floyd was hurt. I mean,
yeah, and
that
goes to
ball.
My point. He didn't have enough depth to cover those.
Right, and I mean, the main thing that was carrying him along was Russell Wilson was popping points left and right nonstop, keeping him in games. It's just, you know, once your offense is shot, then, you know, you can't just bank on that defense to just be the only thing to hold you aground. So without having anything really going on offense, I mean, Allen Robinson had a great year, but that was a surprising year. But if you ain't got the backups for it, you're going to be hurting bad, and that's what hit him. It was like he was a rookie who hit that 10th game on, and the wall was there.
And to kind of expand on that, you know, when you look at people's rosters, you say, oh, this guy's got this guy and this guy's got this guy. I mean, we all know we've been doing this long enough, both in redraft leagues and dynasty, to know that to realistically think that your top starters are going to start every game for you is just not possible. And so, you know, when you look at the power, for me, when you look at the power of a team, is not only their starting lineup, but who can they put in there when they need to have a replacement?
I don't have an answer, and I'm serious. I absolutely don't have I don't have a clue. The team is so damn good, and I went back and looked, and it's not like the games they lost. It's not like they were just completely overpowered in some crazy way. It's just a mystery to me. That's why I threw it on there. Let's move on. There's one more piece of this Scott Phillips conversation I wanted to pursue. We didn't get to ask Scott why he took Leonte Carew, the wide receiver who is with Miami. The Miami wide receiver spot's kind of full. We didn't really understand the pick, and given how people were trading like crazy, it was the busiest trade window in league history. That 48-hour stretch during the draft, people were going nuts. They were trading first and second round picks to get back into the second round, the third round, the fourth round. They were just trading like crazy. Given how people were trading like that, would it have made more sense for Scott Phillips to trade his third-round pick, which is what I think he spent on Lante Crew, for a defensive lineman? Steve?
That's a possibility. I think, you know, I'm not a big fan of Crew, not because of who he is, but just the situation down in Miami. So if you weren't – if you thought that was the best guy available in your mind – well, I would never think he was the best guy available, but if that ever came to down to it, yeah, I certainly would have traded back. There was definitely a lot more talent to pick up. And that was, if I'm not mistaken, that was kind of a early third-round pick.
Fifth pick?
Yeah, the fifth pick. So that still has value. That's a top 30 guy. So, you know, he should have probably considered it. I just don't know that some of the owners are all that savvy or willing to do those kind of trades. I mean, I can't pat myself on the back right now because I don't know how it's going to turn out. But, you know, some of the deals that me and Tom and you make, we're not afraid to pull that trigger. And I think, you know, Scott's a little weary of doing that.
I definitely would have knocked on Andy's door, Muhammad Wilkerson, Leonard Williams, both on the same team. I would have taken a shot that maybe he'd like to split those guys up. Tom's been talking about Sheldon Richardson most of the offseason, and yeah, you got to wait a game or two on the suspension, but you'd still have a really good guy. He's got other guys too, by the way. For me, I would have traded it. I think that defensive lineman would mean more to his franchise than this particular wide receiver is going to mean. Tom?
Myself, I was looking at him picking him up as trying to keep the cupboards full as far as offensive flex positions. They lost Matthews there, I believe, right, in Miami. So they needed that other outside receiver because they're going to have Landry in the slot, you're going to have Parker on one outside area, and then the other outside would be Crew now.
Well, what about Steve Stills?
Been talking up pace for a while about the new coach down there in Miami. I think he's wanting to fill that team up with a lot of young, high-powered, high-talented offensive weapons to put around Tannehill. And with him getting Crew, I think it's going to give him a shot, you know, to be able to have another guy go to in the cupboard if a guy ends up going down hurt. I do agree that he should have made some sort of move or whatever to get some sort of defense, another defensive lineman, or trade out of there to get a lineman. But I can't fault him for taking Crew.
I fault him for taking him there, though. I mean, could he not have traded that pick out, got two picks further back, and probably picked up Crew in the fourth round?
I'm not 100% sure on that, but based off of how things are going with you on your selections of all the wide receivers, I've seen a lot of receivers coming off the board, and he wasn't getting any of his defensive linemen because of Brian, the defensive lineman guru. He better grab a hold of one of his wideouts that he had projected on his board. So the only negative I saw was that for his team and Dream Teams, neither of the two of them made any type of activity or chance or opportunity to, you know, make a move or a trade during the draft. The two of them stood pat with their moves. They took their draft picks, and that was it. They didn't do any moving around. So that was the only negative I saw for them two guys.
For TDs, I still take umbrage with the fact that all he had on his roster were defensive tackles coming into this draft. He needed help on the defensive line. He was the worst team in the league by far. I think 202 points at the entire defensive line position. League average was 340. He was dying. He was dying there. That third-round pick could have netted him a starter. It could have taken care of one half of his problem, and then he's only trying to pick one up in free agency. So receiver-wise, he had Cobb, A.J. Green, Alston Jeffrey, Allen Robinson. He does still have Matt Forte Last year he loaded up on Amir Abdullah, Tevin Coleman. He got Kenneth Dixon and Derrick Henry this year. At some point, you got enough offense. When you have a gaping hole like that at defensive line, the last thing he needed was a fourth-string wide receiver, maybe best case third string. That's just my two thoughts worth on the topic. I think he should have traded
again,
that pick.
Again, looking at his team, though, if Alshon Jeffery starts going off to start off the season, I'm capitalizing on that. I'm trading that guy, like, yesterday. Got 1 year left on his current contract. Trade him for a team that might need that little extra pick-me-up at wide receiver and get that defensive lineman. And I still think he has got a trade partner with Ipswich still if he's willing to make that move to, you know, throw Alshon Jeffery and try to break up that New York Jets defensive line.
Does this actually point to a larger issue, guys, in the fact that, and this is, you know, expanding the topic beyond what we initially thought we would talk about here, but he chose Kenneth Dixon over Sterling Shepard in the first round. Does this raise the fact that he's picking Carew in the third and your potential reasoning being that he needed to bolster the wide receiver core? Would the right pick to bolster the wide receiver core have been Sterling Shepard?
Well,
I know
no
he mentioned
there's no bolstering wide receivers. There's no bolstering running backs. It's all offensive flex. I mean, you know, look at your roster. I mean, I don't see, you know, a huge. I mean, you have Amari Cooper, obviously, but before this, before the suspension, you had Martavis Bryant. But look at your running backs pool. You know, so if he's going to pick Dixon and Henry, why are you picking another rookie guy that has no, that you have no intel on, basically, or you have no idea how he's going to do when you had glaring needs at, like you said, defensive line. And there were still some good guys out there. I think, was Spence still out there?
Spence got doubled up for a second.
No.
Yeah.
No, but we
again,
talked about Chris Jones being
Chris
an option.
Chris Jones? Aldafis Washington, you know.
I agree with
those,
you, Steve, on the old flex. I'm just saying, Tom's argument is valid, that maybe some guys feel they want to load up their offensive flex with wide receivers because it's a PPR league. So if we buy into that mentality, it still doesn't explain then why he passed over Sterling Shepard at 5 overall. So I that was kind of where I was taking the angle.
We remembered how he was talking about possibly looking at Bosa based off what him and Brian had talked about, and then Brian took him. At that point, I don't know what he was thinking. His whole draft board might have been a few at that point, and he might have been scrambling. I don't know, but I know he did try to address it later, and his guy rankings is out for the year. So it's definitely a need that he's going to have to work on during the free agent draft or find a trade partner.
Well, guys, let's move on to the next topic.
Where do you find a trade partner in this league? Just curious.
We're on the phone right now, aren't we?
Tom's phone number is.
I left my phone number on the website.
That's my team, Crazy 7. Steve brought up the fact that I used to have like 10 linebackers on my team, but now have more defensive backs than linebackers. And Steve and I talked off mic a bit about this the day that we did the show, and I thought it would be interesting for us to revisit this topic. The easy answer to why my team has more defensive backs today than it did in 2011 is that the rules changed. Much to my personal dismay, for those that think that I just run roughshod and set all the rules the way I want them, the rules changed to favor defensive backs. And what I did as an owner was I adapted to the rules. And defensive backs are now a giant bargain in points, but especially from a cap standpoint where the contracts for defensive backs are incredibly low. And I'm not sure if everybody in the league has really caught on to that. Not only are the defensive backs scoring more points and are they valid individuals to put into your lineup, but the ability to keep them and maintain them is incredible. It's an incredible advantage. Our cap situation was set, as everybody knows, from having everybody in one room to start to start the league spending their money, and then we took those as the base dollar amounts for players, and we used that going forward every year, adding 2% to each tier to decide what guys get paid. Well, the defensive backs, the value of defensive backs weren't what they are now, so they're underpaid. And to give you a quick glimpse of that before I turn it over to you guys, the franchise dollar amount for a defensive back is $4.46. The tier 16 to 20 linebacker is $4.43. So that's the franchise tag on a defensive back is the equivalent of a 16 to 20 linebacker. It's equivalent to a 10 to 15 defensive lineman. Defensive lineman, $4.13 on 11 to 15, $4.80 on a 6 to 10. The top five defensive backs get paid $4.53. Meanwhile, for linebackers, it's $6.89 for a top five. Defensive line is $5.80. So I think it's clear that the way to go on defense is to start incorporating these defensive backs, both from a point standpoint and a cap standpoint. What say you, starting with Steve?
Yeah, and I was one of the people that was in favor of it because I thought before the rule changed that defensive backs were seldom or if ever used. And they, I mean, you had your top-tier guys, but you were getting to a point where, you know, they weren't even viable once you got, you know, past the 10th or 15th defensive back. And I like it because it kind of amalgamates defensive flex like wide receivers and running backs. You know, you can use them interchangeably. Even though it is a PPR league, you're still going to have a certain amount of running backs that are going to still score well and still be part of starting lineups. And I think that helped the rule change help bring those defensive backs up there. As a matter of fact, I believe that the highest scoring defensive back or the highest defensive player scoring defensive player was a defensive back this year. So, you know, I'm not saying that's the wave of the future, but you're right. And eventually there'll be a somewhat of a market correction. You know, after we talked about it, I kind of thought about it. And, yeah, defensive backs are never going to catch linebackers. But you know what? Wide receivers are never going to catch linebackers. I mean, wide receivers are never going to catch running backs. And the running backs, as far as points go, I mean, as far as the salary goes, so it's actually the reverse on offense. So it's just kind of weird paradigm.
Statistically, to answer, first of all, I disagree. I always have said and felt I provided stats that defensive backs were naturally used, but that's just me countering, you know, that kind of protesting that messaging. But to your question of the statistics, the top player last year defensively was Lavonte David. The second best player was Rashad Jones, a safety from Miami. Third best player was a defensive lineman, J.J. Watt. Of the top 10, two of the top 10 scorers were defensive backs. Tom, take it away.
I think myself and you kind of caught on to this wave a lot sooner than a lot of the other owners. What happened was it came down to, you know, when the rule, I think of the rule change where we finally figured out we had to at least start. I thought at a point in time there we were talking about you had to have a DB or something on the roster. And then that we passed that didn't do that on that route. So we ended up having the two defense linemen and then flipped it to six flex. At that point, I realized, the route two was easiest used to get these safeties, the guys that are roaming and are going to be able to get in on the tackles, and yourself too. We keyed in on that. I saw the dollar amounts that these guys are only being paid for franchising and everything. I'm like, you could draft a nice young stud at the safety and literally have him for his whole entire NFL career in our league and not really have to pay squat to keep the guy for his whole life, I guess, his career. So, I mean, a lot of teams are now coming to the point of realization that these guys are putting up, you know, linebacker and better than linebacker points right now. So, there are a few teams in the league right now that have either one or upwards of three on their team, and they're starting to finally realize, I guess, that this is a trend. This is something that's real. It's viable. And, I mean,
me and Steve both tried going after Darby, and he got them before I did last year. So, I mean, they're out there. They're diamonds in a rough, and if you see one that starts off hot, and due to his situation, injury-wise or whatever, if you see it in the season, you better get them quick because they're not going to get through the cracks anymore.
Until a couple years ago, nobody had ever drafted defensive backs early. And after the rule changes, I drafted Landon Collins from the Giants. But the comment I was going to make before we segue to a different topic is the fact that the defensive backs' points were raised at the exact time that the NFL is going further and further down the passing road. So defensive backs, nickel packages, dime packages being the base packages that many games are started with, more and more DBs are on the field. So I think it's going to continue to be something that people can hang their hat on, and there's lots of people that need extra defensive starters.
And having more viable players for every team, I think that makes the league a better league.
Well, guys, let's move on to another topic that came up during my Crazy 7 episode that had to do with the big quarterback move that was made to get Aaron Rodgers. I stated in the show that I had talks with Scott Phillips' team, Show Me Your TDs, to acquire Russell Wilson, but the talks had fallen through because Scott wanted to wait until after the NFL rookie draft. When I made the trade with Scott, Scott had sent me a note asking if Aaron Rodgers was worth that much more than Russell Wilson. And to put this into context, the opening offers for Wilson when I was trying to talk to Scott, and he was receptive, but he was kind of really noncommittal. He was interested, but he wasn't really willing to dig in. He wanted to have more information out of the rookie draft, and then Steve's offer came along, and, you know, I had to take the sure thing. But going back to the offers, Scott was offered for Russell Wilson, quarterback Kirk Cousins or Matthew Stafford, either Cameron Jordan, the defensive lineman, New Orleans, or Ndamukong Suh, Miami, and a second-round pick in the 2016 draft. So that was the starting offer that was put out there. And for Aaron Rodgers, to get him, I had to toss in both. So I took the same offer, but I had to toss in both defensive linemen, and I had to add a first-round pick. And that brings me to my question. Knowing how that all went down, and again, the fact that I said I pulled the trigger on it. I wasn't going to wait and be left empty-handed. I did not want to go into the season with just Stafford and Cousins as my QBs. What quarterback would you guys rather have today if you were running my franchise, Crazy 7? Steve.
I think you should trade for Russell Wilson and trade me back Aaron Rodgers. No. Obviously, Aaron Rodgers, especially when we talk, when we talk about your team, we always mention that championship window that you're in. And while Russell Wilson is a very good quarterback, and he's a quarterback that you want to have for the future, you can have him for the next 5-6 years. I believe that Aaron Rodgers gives you the best chance for that way to punch through that glass ceiling, so to speak. So I think I would definitely go with Aaron Rodgers.
Tom.
In my eyes, I'm a big, strong, firm backer of Aaron Rodgers, but in hindsight, the guy who probably would have been wanting to go forward would have been probably Russell, just for the fact that he gives you the opportunity to get some extra stuff out of his legs that not necessarily get exactly with Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers would be able to play with his elusiveness out of the pocket and make something happen downfield. Although Russell Wilson could think, whereas he's going to take off and probably get either or passing down or a rushing touchdown. But seeing that the salary cap where it would be, they're both up on their one last, they both have their one last year on contract right now, I think that the contract would have been partly in the back of my mind as well as going with Wilson.
Well, there you have it, the first ever commentary off of a drive-through McDonald's speaker. I'm teasing you because you were cutting in and out, but I think we got most of everything you said. Obviously, I say I you know, I was pursuing Russell Wilson. I thought that it might be cheaper to get Russell Wilson, and he hesitated, and I couldn't afford to hesitate. So moving on over to the Marauding Minotaurs, where Brian explained his philosophy on his defensive line moves. I think Brian trading to get the third pick in the first and second rounds and then proceeding to spend those picks on Joey Bosa and DeForest Buckner was one of, if not the biggest story of the offseason. We've been really critical of the moves. After hearing Brian's explanation, do you guys feel better about those moves? Steve.
I don't feel better about those moves. I did give him a 2. I would probably change it to a 2.5 when I reconsider the trade he made for Bortles. That might actually be equal to or even a better trade for him than my trade for with Aaron Rodgers. But I just can't get over the fact that you went and gave up all that firepower to get guys of that kind of unknown productivity and then completely ignoring the fact that you could have gotten guys that will produce, you know, a la your Shepherd and your Corey Coleman's or even, you know, Darren Lee or Deion Jones. I just can't. I mean, I can understand being concerned about the defensive line, but I mean, if you look at your whole team, that's the second to last place you look to actually have to make a major improvement, right? Unless it's really bad. I mean, place kickers are a dime a dozen, and you know, defensive linemen, I wouldn't say they're a dime a dozen, but you can trade. I'd rather trade players and get good defensive linemen than use those types of draft picks on them. I can't excuse it. I can't get on board.
Tom, feel better about Brian's moves?
No, I still don't feel good about it. I like the move that he made to get the picks out of me with the Bortles move, but to do all that he did to unload a top 10, top 8 wide receiver and pick up a guy who possibly could be flipped to a defensive linebacker instead of a defense end, I wouldn't have done it.
Don't forget he gave up Tuitt and Barron. I mean, if he keeps Tuitt, he only has to worry about one defensive lineman, really, right? So,
exactly.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
And that's kind of what made me allow the deal to go the way he wanted it to go then. If he's going to put him in there, then I was like, all right, then I'll do this deal.
Well, Brian's thoughts are that he lost Chandler Jones. He was banking on him being a starter and felt he could get another starter out of what he had. And then when he lost Chandler Jones to the position move, I think, I won't say panicked, because he truly does like defensive linemen. He thinks that's a key to victory. I think he's been seeing the J.J. Watt factor for years and trying to emulate that. You can't really emulate that. You lock into it. I didn't know J.J. Watt was going to turn into the top defensive scoring player in the league when I, you know, got him at the auction. I thought he'd be pretty good and starter capable, but Brian's chased Ziggy Ansah over the years and several other players at the defensive line position. So I don't feel better about it. I think he gave up way too much to make it happen, and I guess we've beaten that horse to death. So let's move over to the Team of Dreams. I gave Dream a 2.5 for their out of a 5-point scale. Guys, was I wrong for that? He did improve at defensive flex. He got a young quarterback to groom. I think my 2.5, pardon me, is more related to the fact that he had a damn good defensive flex to begin with. So, yeah, he picked up defense, but I'm not sure he starts more than Miles Jack this year, meaning, you know, adding Miles Jack and some guys for the future isn't enough, in my mind, to move beyond 2.5. I think you guys were higher than me. What did you see? Am I wrong on the 2.5?
Well, no, I can see where you went with that, because the real glaring deficiency in his offseason moves is the fact that he let two players go with $37 worth of cap space. That's you can't do that. I mean, getting rid of Barry Church goal was just ridiculous. I mean, what would he have cost him? $6, maybe? Or no, you said the franchise tag for he could have got him for $4.
I can tell you right now what it would have cost him to keep. Which player did you mention? Church would have cost him.
Church.
He would have had to franchise or transition him. like 470, 471.
Right.
That would have been a 10%
and so then
raise.
What, yeah, so what, he would have, what, been down to $33 on his cap? I mean, that's, you know, and then who else, he let somebody else go
Willie
on the
Steed,
offensive side.
Willie Steed would have been $3.91. LeSean McCoy would have cost him $22.39, but he was already paying him, you know, like $21.50, $22 to begin with. I just thought right of first refusals would have been smart.
What? I would have straight up re-signed Snead, and I would have put a right of first refusal on McCoy, and then, you know, let the chips fall where they may for the rest of my roster. Obviously, he can make some moves, drop some guys here and there, pick up some guys in free agency. So I thought, and the reason I gave him a three was because I thought he made some steps forward, but then he made equally as many steps back. And my grading scale basically is if you're a three, if you just did what you the very minimum you had to do to either maintain or just to maintain where you were. And I think all he did is maintain his position. I don't think he necessarily improved his position within the division of the league. So that's why I gave him a three.
Tom, what do you think? 2.5 too low.
No, I think I went with a three on it. And I think 2.5, three is a neighborhood for him. I do see the two young DBs / safeties as some guys that are going to put up some nice points for him. Got an aging couple guys in that defensive linebacking core, so he's got to get some influx of young youth in there. And I think he figured that his offense is set. I really don't know. Are you
saying Alec Ogletree's too old to be on his roster?
Oh, yeah, that's the Alec. Yeah,
that's right, the carnival.
Yeah, that's
answer.
Probably the problem. Yeah, because, you know, what, 5 years in the league and working with Laurinaitis and that, it'll put age on you.
Guys, we have 3 minutes left. Let's keep it going. We'll roll right into the last question, which has to do with our rankings of each team. Each episode, I asked you to give me a grade on a 5-point scale as to what you thought of that team's offseason. With some time having gone by, does anybody want to change their grade, or does anybody want to challenge someone else's grade? And before Steve challenges me, I'll start with my grade of the Minotaurs. I need to splice that grade that I gave him. I gave him a 4 because he picked up double picks in the first, second, and third round next year. That's not going to help him this year. So that means it's going to be a 4 for the future. Given the defensive line moves, the loss of Bryant, I've got to move him down to a 3 for 2016. 30 seconds each. Anybody? Steve?
I'll refute Marauding Minotaur's grade of 5 on himself.
Me too.
Tom,
and
you
like,
have something?
No, I'm just going to stay where I stood.
All right, Steve, take another 30.
Well, I was just going to say, like I said, I moved up, I moved Marauding Minotaurs up to the 2.5 because, like you said, he did some things for the future. And I still am convinced that the trade, up until he made the draft picks, I thought the trade was a viable trade. I know he gave up a lot of stuff, but he gave himself some firepower to go into the draft, and he just, his powder was wet. He blew it.
Well, guys, I can't thank you enough. 15 shows, incredible. We did it. We hit every single team in the league, and we recapped all the divisions. It's been great. Do you have any last comments that you guys want to throw out?
I still want to make trades, man.
More trades?
I gave you one, Tom. I gave you a great trade, and you rejected it, and you didn't even counteroffer.
Yeah, you wanted to
what are you, what are you, some? What are you? Some kind of rookie trader? What kind of guy doesn't come back with a counteroffer? God, amateur.
Same guy who didn't even put out the trade offer the first time.
You guys, this has been great.
Yeah.
It's going to do it, guys, and I mean that's it. Time to take 3 steps towards the door. We don't have to stop talking, but we can't talk here because we're out of time. This officially puts an end to the 2016 off-season moves team-by-team breakdown series. I'd like to offer a special thanks to everyone that helped co-host the show, especially Tom and Steve, who were along for the entire ride. Can't wait to do it again, guys. Until then, thanks for listening. This has been another episode of the Mad Dog Dynasty League podcast. Everybody together, ready? One, we're going to woo. One, two, three.
Woo!
Woo!
trade.
Do it. Do it.
Do it. Trade. Do it. Do it. Trade.
Pretend like we're talking and we're shuffling our pages like